next speaker is Dave Robbins, who will be talking about a contextual model for assessing the Genesis 1 to 3 texts about our origins.
All right. So I'm Dave. This is my third ASA. I'll give you a little bit more background in a minute, but I grew up with a rock collection, and that led me into a degree in geology from Michigan State, and that led it to a master's in metamorphic petrology at the University of Calgary, which brought me up to Canada, which took me to northern Manitoba, where there's a big nickel deposit, which is where I found my wife. And so because of a rock collection, it all worked out well, right? So because of that, so the other part of my testimony is, I grew up in a congregational church, which has a great tradition, as I'm sure everyone knows. We were a fairly liberal church right next door to the University of Michigan campus, not mean to disparage campuses in any way. But I grew up really not understanding the relationship that I was intended to have with Christ. By the time I had an interest in science in high school, I basically left church, and it was 7 or 8 years later before I found my way back, before God drew me back. And as a geologist and a Christian, I had some things to kind of work through in talking to people and so forth. So part of my journey that you'll see today has to do with me asking questions. And I wish I would have heard Alan's talk and Dick's talk about 10 years ago. It would have saved me some effort. So Nancy elbowed me at 5:30 this morning, and I'm glad because I was still putting this together. And I left my jacket in the car, so that's not my normal jacket. That's her sweater. It was a little bit cold in our trailer this morning, so we've been traveling, and so we're in the trailer. So I want to say that what you've just heard, I'm in general agreement with. I did a presentation, my first one for ASA and NOAA back in 2014, and I came up also, well, not me, but a lot of people, and I think evidence points to that 2900 BC is a very viable date for Noah's flood and perhaps an anchor to a timeline for Adam. So we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go. So the reason that I'm standing here today is because Nancy and I have had, as we all have, an interesting testimony with God. And I encourage you all to share that testimony because that's the most powerful tool to, you know, win people to Christ. So we're writing this book, and the book delves into a little bit of theology. I'm not a theology major or anything like that. And I'm an old earth guy. So part of my audience I know is going to be old geologist friends. So I write about creation from that standpoint. And when I got to Adam, I realized I was still struggling with, in my own heart, kind of understanding what that was about. I won't say that I think I've got a stake in the ground. I think I have a new conviction that I didn't have before. And that conviction has to do with Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 just changing me now as I read it. I really like what Alan had to say about the sequence of those, and that gives me some food for thought for sure. So from Genesis 1 and 2 and 3, the main thing that I get is I'm created, number one, and I'm created with a purpose, as it tells me in Genesis 1, but Genesis 2 tells me that I'm created with the prospect of having a relationship with God, because to me, that's what's unique about Adam in the garden and Eve in the garden. They had a relationship with God. So one thing I picked up from the conference is just a reminder of who I am and that this is all for Christ. So where's my book here? So I got the same book that was held up a minute ago. In my search, this book by Denis Lamoureux, and I've talked to him on the phone. He's a great guy. It gave me some food for thought. And what I decided to do was, if I took those four models that he's got and compared them to some different what I'll call contexts, what does that get me? So this is not so much about my assessment of these contexts that I'm going to suggest, but it's about a method to examine and give us a way to sort through our various and diverse points of view. This should be the benefit of the scientific method. I'm simply proposing here some possible parameters to consider, and if they're not valid, then elimination should be defensible. So what's my approach? I took the four views of Adam, the book, and I'm going to list those, and I'm proposing a set of 10 different scientific and biblical contexts by which to assess those views. The first thing I did was I said, well, does a particular view relate or not to a context? So I just did what I call a presence or absence test. And then I went through my own assessment of what I knew. And if I had done it now after these talks, I'd have a lot more data on some of those. So Dick did part of my job here by describing what's in the book. But basically, view one is Adam is not historical. Humankind is from a guided evolutionary process. View two, which I've taken liberty to rename the continuum view, basically suggests that Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 are sequel in nature. I know that can be argued, but that's the model that I'm going with for today. So Walton adopts this view in saying that Adam is archetypical as a representative of the human race in a sacred space. He views Adam as historical, and he doesn't talk about biology. Perhaps he's a special creation. Davis Young, who's a fellow of the ASA, talks about in 1995 paper that Genesis 2 could be viewed as a sequel to Genesis 1 to harmonize the two. Last year, I was really privileged to meet and hear Joshua Swamidas, and his talk really gave me the possibility now that I can view Adam as a real person in a real place in the Middle East, maybe as early as 6,000 years ago, and we could all be genealogically related to him. So number three is a paleoarchaeological view. I've been practicing that word a lot. That simply means that Adam is somewhere in the fossil record at a junction point, somewhere. Number four is a young Earth view. I think that part of the model has some merit in that it talks about a de novo creation, which, okay, could be. So it talks about a recent unevolved human. What I disagree with, and pardon me for any creationists in the audience, but I'm just not here. I believe that the earth is old and God created all of it for his purposes. So what are my contexts? Paleoarchaeological, archaeological, historical, biological, help me out here. Thank you. Geographical, environmental, religious and spiritual, biblical, and mythological. So could there be others? Of course. And I will admit to some circular reasoning as I came up with these, because I had in mind a recent Adam, and you'll see that some of my contexts favor a recent Near East model. So let's look at the presence or absence of these contexts. Is it present? Is it absent? Am I not sure? Is it not applicable? So here's my first chart that I put together. So here's all the contexts, obviously. So I've got column 1, 2, 3, 4. Never existed. A continuing view of Genesis 1 and 2. He's somewhere in the paleontological record. And he's a de novo recent creation. Those four. So I went through each one and I said, okay, is this a possible match or not? And you can see the results of that. So I've got, obviously, if he's not real, none of this applies. So in a continuum view, I get a lot of hits. My paleoarchaeology view seems to have some gaps in the way that it can relate to these contexts that I've chosen. And the young earth view kind of comes out like the continuum view. So I'll just let you absorb that for just a minute. What I'm going to do is very quickly step through each one of these 10 contexts. The information is in the presentation, and I encourage you to look at that for reference. So here's what I'm calling my preliminary assessment, because you'll see you could delve into this ad infinitum, and I think we should be delving into it ad infinitum. So paleoarchaeology, the famous example being the Leakeys. They are known as, Louis Leakey would be considered, I believe, the father of modern paleoarchaeology. Their work in the Olduvai Gorge and later at Tancana Lake was really groundbreaking. The picture that they've starred in, many, many now have, of course, contributed to, gives us this kind of a picture of hominins, which goes back perhaps as far as 7 million years, and it seems like every time I look at it, it's gone back a little bit farther. So the paleoarchaeology model would say, or paleoanthropological model would say, that Adam is somewhere in this record. I want to point out, though, that to me, that record is completely different from Genesis 2, as you'll see in a minute here. So what about geographical? Well, we know that early man came out of Africa. He populated the earth. Here's the Near East. There's crisscrossing going on. But there's a lot of evidence, as we just learned again today, that the biblical texts have a very much a Near East focus. So geographically, I think that we need to keep the Near East in mind. As a geologist, I'm interested in the past. And so this is a oxygen isotope data graph of that shows us temperatures throughout the Holocene period, which is the last 10 to 12,000 years. And this curve is interesting to me because I try to put Adam in a context of the Neolithic Revolution. And the Neolithic Revolution basically begins with the origins of agriculture over here. And then we have settlements. And then the Bronze Age is this third bubble here. So these dates and these bubbles are the work of Bruce Railsback from the University of Georgia. So this is a context that, to me, we need to fit Adam into. So this little bit of the curve over here, which is highlighted up here, is broken out into several other little blips here. One is called the Younger Dryas. There's an Older Dryas. And LGM means the last glacial maximum. So it's interesting to think about the Younger Dryas. And some people would view this as being possible evidence or time period for Noah's flood. Indeed, some folks recently have thought about evidence for comet strike or storms as causing this. So that might be the disruption that you'd need for a biblical type flood. So just keep the Younger Dryas in mind. So the fourth context is archaeological. So where do our four views fit into this picture? View number two and four, the continuum model and the young earth or recent Adam model are the only ones that seem to relate to this at all. But this is a very interesting picture to me, showing the early agricultural sites, which would be up in Anatolia, up in this area, over in the Zagros Mountains. So civilization really started in these areas. I'll give you a couple of examples in a minute. And people migrated into Mesopotamia from these other areas. So we have a lot of data, this is just to point out, on early agriculture and animal husbandry. I recently found this summary by Zetter. There's a lot of information, and I think that we should be able to use some of this data to help us with a timeline for a possible Adam. So just some examples of these earlier settlements I was talking about. Göbekli Tepe goes back to 9600 BC. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Very, very interesting. Some people call it the first temple because of the motifs on these cross-like structures made out of stone. These are animal figures. There's a lot of information that people have been analyzing these over the years. It was discovered, I believe, as recently as the 1950s. Another one close by is called Kitilhoyuk. So these mounds go back to 7400 BC, another UNESCO site. And this is often considered the first settlement. Now, there are other settlements going on, but this was a major find in that area. I mentioned in my abstract that there are lots of sites even around the world. So all of these, if you were to create a model for Adam in a timeline, we need to consider this. How does this all play out? So these sites are from Graham Hancock and his Ancient Apocalypse Netflix series. He looks at the Younger Dryas event as being the great flood event. He looks for civilizations that predate that, theorizing that everything is covered up by sea level rise now. But he has some very interesting dates to consider on some of these locations. Archaeologists have discovered an awful lot about the Near East in the last 170 years, as Dick pointed out. So we have the Natufian culture over here in what's now the Israel area. Some of the oldest agriculture sites go back 22,000 years. Really, you might call them agricultural experiments. And then this is a map of some of the early cultures that led to the Ubaidian culture here. So we've got the Husana culture at 6,000 BC to 5,300, kind of overlaps the Samara culture and the Halef culture, and then the Ubaid culture coming in around 5,400 BC. Maybe it ended around 3,200 BC, which I find curious if you have a date around 3,000 BC for Noah. So we need to consider the historical aspects of whatever view we hold. We have written records that date as far back as 3000 BC. We certainly need to understand that some of this history takes on mythological character. But combined with archaeology, as again we saw in the previous presentations, we start to find some interesting things. So in the previous talk I gave on Noah some years ago, I stumbled upon Shuripak. It's mentioned in the King's List that Alan talked about. There's been a lot of work done on it. I ordered the book that Martin published in 1973 on it. And this is this is her map of what the site looks like today. You can see on the map where it's located. So what was really interesting to me is there's a possible flood level in some digs that were done back in the 1930s, and they found this pottery in on a living surface, and other sites have dated this pottery to 2900 BC. So that's where one of these dates for a 2900 BC flood comes from. So a Noah figure is associated with living in Shuripak. We certainly have to consider the biology of Adam, but from my point of view, our species is an evolved species. There's certainly something very, very special about being human. Last summer, we had a chance to visit in British Columbia, the Burgess Shale. Some of you went and saw some of those fossils at the Royal Ontario Museum. In our travels this summer, we met this funky-looking bird. This is an early feathered dinosaur. But we come from those creatures. Schreiner points out that we have a traceable genetic ancestry in the Holocene. So to look at these genetics is certainly important. I find it interesting that in Genesis, the fauna are relatable that are talked about. We see sheep and oxen and goats. We don't see megafauna mentioned that would have died out before the Holocene. Is Adam a special creation? I don't know, but he seems to fit into this Holocene picture. So again, I mentioned Joshua Swaminathan's work. Evolutionary science splintered the traditional account of Adam and Eve, fracturing our common narrative. The splintering can be undone. If you haven't read his book or are familiar with him, I encourage you to check out his work. So anthropological. So is there something we can apply here? We can look at biological elements. Certainly archaeology is included. We can look at linguistic patterns, maybe in the Middle East. How does that relate to a possible model such as Dick was talking about? And I mentioned cultures. We can talk about religious and spiritual themes. Perhaps these have a relationship with what's going on, and we've certainly already seen some of that. But I've always been kind of curious about the Zoroastrianism, which is one of the earliest one-god religions. And the tie in Iran with that religion, perhaps, you know, coming out of a connection with Adam and the later Sumerian stories. So, if Adam, then we can't ignore the Bible, in my humble opinion. Matter of fact, if it wasn't for the Bible, we wouldn't be talking about Adam. So, the Bible in Genesis 1 talks about us being created in God's image. Genesis 2, Adam's place in the garden in the east. Genesis 3 talks about his disobedience and the consequences. You know, we've already heard about, but there are Cain and Abel, the farming and flocks connections, and the Neolithic Revolution. I think the Bronze Age can help us maybe pin down some dates here. I've just kind of started to take a look at some of the dates around civilization and how the flood fits into that. And Alan's way ahead of the game in terms of looking at some of the dates there. I find it interesting that we have 10 generations from Adam to Noah. So if Noah is as recent as 3,000 years, then looking for Adam, you know, 100,000 years ago even, doesn't seem to fit very well with the context. So the guard is important. I learned a lot from Dick's talk about the possibility of a Persian Gulf location. Dilmun is what a guy by the name of Dolphin had written about years ago. But I also came across a guy whose name is David Roll. He's an archaeologist, and he puts the garden up north by Tibritz up here. And other contexts aside, I always found it kind of curious that the earliest civilizations were in southern Turkey and down this way, which was kind of at an intersection of that. Where that might go, I don't know, but it is a context to take a look at. So the garden is important. I had a conversation, well, really it was a question about one of the views that's been presented. And when I asked, well, how does this fit with the garden? The answer was, well, the garden really doesn't matter. I think the garden does matter, not only in terms of the context of Adam and everything that went on there, but even in Revelation, we see that Genesis 1 to 3 comes full circle. So finally, there's a mythological context, and we've heard something about that, and I've listed a few of these things. One thing I want to point out is that back in, maybe 15 years ago, there was an article, no, actually it was 2001, there's an article in the New York Times about a massive wave that had hit Madagascar and had left these huge cliffs and patterns on top of them. And a professor by the name of Dallas Abbott got interested in that. She found these features on Google Earth. And so she formed a team called the Holocene Working Group. And they took a look at what might have formed these. And they theorized that it had been a meteor impact. This Philip W. Bruce Massey wrote a paper, several papers with him. He was already sort of an expert on mythology and the meanings behind mythologies, doing some work with the Hawaiian Islands people. And he looked at the data that's presented in some of the flood myths that we know about around the world. And he came up with a date of 2900 based upon some astronomy data that he gleaned from those myths. So I found that an interesting data point. So my concluding remarks are, all of these contexts should help us evaluate whatever view of Adam we take, including the four that I've pointed out here today. I came into this exercise with some opinion, and perhaps I wasn't too surprised that only one view really had a relation with every context. There are still a few question marks, I admit. So what might this be suggesting? So my conclusion is that the continuum view, or at least a recent Adam, seems to be the best fit with the context as I assessed. The continuum view gives us a portrayal of Adam as a recent and not an ancient ancestor in the paleoarchaeological record. Genesis 1 and 2 and 3, given what Alan said about maybe Genesis 1 came after, but perhaps they really are separated by time. If we consider that one, God created humankind, is evidenced by the paleoarchaeological record, and the setting in Genesis 2 is a special situation with Adam. So Genesis 2 and 3 certainly seem related to the regions including and bordering the Fertile Crescent. So we certainly have data towards a timeline, and I think that these contexts could be gleaned even further. So when I started thinking about this, if I've got Noah here, I can put Adam in a Near East and Sumer location. If I don't have their relationship, then maybe I can argue that he's at some maybe temperature maximum. I can put him way back into the Younger Dryas. There are different options to look at him. So all of this to me is very important. It's important to knowledge of who we each are. And it's important as we share the gospel with people. Genesis tells us that Adam can mean different things. Mankind, a man, male, man, a woman. But he is referred to by Adam. So this first Adam provides us understanding of who we are. It says that God breathed into him a living soul, a nephesh. It says he was offered an eternal relationship with his creator. He demonstrates the consequences of sin. That's a whole other topic to get into. To me, there's a connection between our needing the Spirit, as has been talked about today, as the new birth with which from which Adam really gave up the Spirit when he disobeyed God. So I want to close with, again, the need to continue to evaluate our understanding. There's been a lot written, and several of the books that have come out recently have been pointed out here. I think that all of those views really do need to be weighed against some kind of contextual model. If I go back to Davis Young's paper in 1995, he quotes Dale Moody in this way. Very few theologians have made any effort to construct a biblical anthropology congenial with scientific anthropology, but the work desperately needs to be done. And I would expand that to say that's true for all of these contexts that I've talked about and maybe more. So my view at this point in time is that Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and 3 inform me about who I am. I've got some reading suggestions in place of an extensive bibliography at the end of the presentation, and I want to thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm curious. I noticed you interacted with the work of William Lane Craig and Joshua Swami Das. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on the really recent work by Andrew Loke, who's written a little bit about that. He's kind of the third part of this, like, historical Adam views.
I'll have to read it. I'm not familiar with it.
This is a random question. That's a great book.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of your contexts, which you call contexts, they're sort of presuppose a concordist reading of Genesis, which is why that first one kind of had not applicable, not applicable, not applicable. That being said, I kind of wonder how valuable it really is as a criterion for sorting, in a sense. You have to, if you read Genesis concordistically, then they're valid kind of criteria. But if you don't, then they're irrelevant. So it seemed like it's sort of just it already sort of pushes you a certain direction or something. Just curious what you think about that.
I'm new to this. Those terms are not in my immediate vocabulary. Oh, I got it here. The thing to me about the non-historical Adam is, so, okay, fine, call him non-historical, but then how do you relate that to all of Genesis? And I know, the mythology and the types and all that stuff come into it. But if you're going to talk about a real Adam, there's such a disparity between those models. So the paleoarchaeological model just does not even attempt to address any of the Genesis contexts. So to me, that's a huge problem. The young Earth model doesn't acknowledge that the fossils are even there. So that, to me, is a problem. So if I try to look at the actual data that we have, it comes back to this continuum model. And that's a huge issue because that's a huge theological jump. And, we're coming from that place of doctrines that go back, pre-Enlightenment that we brought forward. So to me, from a science point of view, I think that the contexts are valid.
All right, one of you, maybe for both of you, believe it was God's intent for inspiring the creation story.
God's intent for inspiring the creation story. So are you talking about Genesis 1? Are we talking about Adam? I'm not quite sure where you're going with the question.
Yeah, and I narrowed it to the creation story because it's present in a couple of different ways. You start with the creation of the earth, and then the animals and birds and such, and then humans.
Right.
And then, of course, we revisit that in chapter 2, and there's some controversy about the timeline and all this, but in the end, we do have, as we believe as Christians, inspiration to the biblical authors to write this. So we have this text. God has given us knowledge of creation through the scriptures, and of course, we have also in the creation that we see. So why do you believe God inspired that writing for us to read it and then now debate it, so to speak?
I think we only debate it because we try to put it into our current scientific context. And I don't believe it's supposed to be 100% read that way. You know, I know a lot of people view that differently. My own take on it, just as a personal take, is that it tells me God created everything. It tells me he had a purpose in doing that. It tells me he had good intentions. It tells me at some point that he desired for humankind to come forward. You know, matter of fact, the Trinity decided that, right? We. So here we are. And I believe that because of the evolutionary record that I think is getting pretty hard to debate, you can debate process, you can debate how that came about, but the record is there. I believe God used that record to bring us forth. And we are an extremely special creature. I mean, even as we look at ourselves compared to the creation. So that's what that story tells me. We did some traveling this summer and visited some native cultures in Canada, some of their exhibits, and nothing dissuading their cultures. But if you look at other cultures, you have stories about spirit women and birds and different kinds of things, right? Genesis is so different than that to me. To me, it's an inspired story of how mankind came about. The question I've always had is, where's Adam? If Adam's real, is he back in that ancient record, or is he separate? And so many sermons that I've heard over the years talk about Adam as being the first human beings. Well, I know the definition of human can be debated, but if you go back and look, you know, at the origins of Homo sapiens, putting him back that far, as people do, divorces it from the Genesis text. So that's the thing that I've struggled with in my trying to come to grips with it. Does that help?
Yes. I think we're gonna call it a day, or at least early afternoon. And I think the speakers will be around if you want to keep asking questions.